Blog Talk Radio.
Aloha and welcome to Talking Pictures. Today we have a special episode. Well, you know what? Every episode is special. We are going to be interviewing the co-creators of Doucheaholics, which I reviewed last night, and now you can catch on our Talking Pictures Facebook page, as well as my personal Facebook page, and a few other places. We are updating websites. We have been fortunate lately to be doing 5 or 6 episodes a week, so it's really hard to get them all up as the main show on the webpage. If you go to www.talkingpicturesla.com, you can check out a fun, cool interview I did with Mr. Greg Fraser, ASC, who shot the film Lion. If you haven't seen Lion, you gotta check it out tonight on Netflix. So today we are going to discuss this comedy series with the co-creators. In the review, I discussed how Sean was also today we get a writer and a director and part of the editing team who's going to sit down and with us, and it's going to be the creators and executive producers talking from. We're going to talk about the development and the writing and kind of more of that side, because sometimes things are so centered on the director and that's just what happens in this business. And I'm guilty of going into a review and discussing the director too much. But that is just, I guess, what the film business has done to us. So Doucheaholics, this great comedy series. And hold on, let me see. Is this the... Welcome.
Hey, Paul, it's Sean and Elizabeth.
Hey, Paul.
How's it
going?
How are you? I'm good.
We're doing great. We could use a little more sleep, but other than that, we're wonderful. How are you?
I'm good. I mean, I've been getting more sleep than you guys, but yeah, I could use maybe another hour or two.
That's true. Then maybe we'll be on like an hour.
Right. Well, Elizabeth, nice to meet you again. I believe I met you at Dances with Film. So
it is very nice to re-meet you as well, Paul.
Thank you.
I heard I totally missed your dog. Apparently your dog was there, and Sean was trying to prompt my memory of the dog. And I'm so bummed that I did not like take advantage of being able to meet your canine there. I definitely would have probably forgone all my other responsibilities in terms of like promoting the series and attending my own screening just if I saw your dog. So maybe it's a good thing, but nonetheless, it's nice to ask you again.
Yeah, no, it was, I told Sean, she was quite the hit. And once she figured that out, it was like she wasn't sitting in her kennel. And, you know, I never thought I'd see my dog standing in front of the Dolby Center and then see me go back in the room and follow me like I know the party's in there. It was just the most surreal thing. I have it on. I swore I would never see that. Like, she knew Dances with Films was going on, and that's where I get talked to and petted. So anyways, but yeah, thank you for mentioning her. She absolutely loves it. So welcome to the show, and we appreciate you guys making time today. It was a lot of fun for me to watch this, to review this. Our executive producer who reviewed it for Dances with Films kept telling me, have you watched it? Have you watched it? Have you watched it? And I said, well, I don't have the 2 episodes the director wants to send me. And, so today, my first question, and you guys, I guess we can start with Elizabeth. And again, Elizabeth, I've told Sean, I'm sure he told you, nothing on this show is personal or gossipy or anything like that. So if the guest wants to be personal, they can. But as a co-creator, how was this idea kind of thrown around, or did you guys kind of mutually pitch it, or what was kind of like the first experience?
Well, it really kind of just started as a kind of just a joke between two might as well be married after all these years people. Just, you know, we We play around, we joke around with each other, and just kind of some name-calling, little ribbon going on, and suddenly I told him he was a doucheaholic, and he should go to a Doucheaholics Anonymous meeting, and it was one of those things that we both kind of went like, oh, wait, let's put, like, whatever's going on here on pause, and let's, like, talk about that a little bit, and then it just became this kind of just riffing of, like, oh, this would be, like, a great thing to explore. And initially we were kind of maybe thinking, and this was a very brief consideration, like, oh, what about like a short film or, you know, something along the lines of just a one-off. But then the more we started talking and just thinking about like these random crazy characters that one would find in a Doucheaholics meeting, the more it just became apparent, like, all right, well, this is either going to be like a 20-hour movie or like maybe we could turn this into some kind of like series then.
Okay. And
yeah, like one of the things we thought of, we referred to was it's kind of like Law and Order. You know, Law and Order is always dependable in terms of like there's always going to be crime and then people shift. And for doucheaholics, that's the idea too, is that like there's really so many countless douchebags and doucheaholics that and so many kinds of types of people and cultures and all these stories to mine that doucheaholics is like Law and Order, really.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
No, that's a great analogy because I'm as you guys probably heard in my review, when I said I don't care, I definitely respect the hell out of other people, but I have been taking a route lately as a host where I kind of just, and of course, Sean, thanks to you, it kind of came from the Defiant Ones where I was just like, hey, you know, look where these guys got saying whatever the hell they wanted. So so really what I was thinking was douchebag, the first time I ever heard the term was in Revenge of the Nerds when those guys say, what are you looking at, nerds? And Booger says, my grandma's old douchebag, but that's in Ohio. And I thought, what the hell is that? Now, we won't go down into what a douchebag is. And then as it became a popular culture saying to call someone that, I was really pulled in by this title because I thought, you know, how many people actually admit to that? So I guess you guys have, you know, without spoiling, it's obvious that you guys have on your website, you say that you have five or six douchebags. Was this originally like a list of like 20 douchebags and there was like a process of bringing it down to five?
No, because we're not done yet. Initially when we were just kind of ripping on the different types of douches, I mean, it was just kind of like an endless list. I actually have saved on my laptop just a list of the most random douches one can think of, and it just became a case of like, all right, we can't do like all of these in one season, so we're just kind of saving them, storing them up. We actually have not most of, but a good majority, I guess, of season 2 shot already, so we have some fresh douchebags for you guys coming up next year. And then we're just going to maybe kind of go down the list. One thing that's been really exciting actually is talking to actors who have seen, you know, either the trailer or, you know, we send them like a private link to an episode and they want to get involved, and we're finding people are pitching us douches now. So I think we're good in terms of, we're not going to have to go down to the well like anytime soon.
Yeah. And one of the fun things that we did was, you know, it went through this collaborative process between Elizabeth and myself where when we were developing it, it was like pairing, you know, the way that you'd pair a chef would pair like a meal with a certain wine. The conversation would always revolve around what actors, you know, because we're both actors and we love actors, and part of that came from this love of acting and actors and who could be paired right for a role. And so it was kind of, and on a writing end, I didn't want to write something where I wouldn't feel comfortable with the person playing the role. So it was a very specific pairing that Elizabeth and I went through in terms of agreeing, like, all right, it's this person for this role and this, like, this type of character. And then it was like, all right, we're shooting in 7 days. running, like, let's, like, and then it's just like working on that specific thing. And so that every single character, I don't know who else can say this to this degree, but like every single character in that show, the part was written for them. Like in the first season, every single doucheaholic was specifically written for that person. So T-Bag specifically, he's a really talented actor, Anthony Marks, and we both have worked with him. We love him. And so T-Bag was written like for him. It was like a tailor-made suit for him, you know, because he'd been in a lot of other work. But he didn't, like, we wanted to write something where he could shine in another way and show another part of himself. And same with D-Cup. We'd worked with her before. So D'Angela, Laura, Alexa, who plays Melody. So Melody and then and Madison and Ted and Wilhelmina. Those were all characters. And as well as Elizabeth and myself, those roles were written for us. There was no one else that was going to play Sandbag. And Harmony is my sister Syrah, who's a talented actress herself. And so everyone was, it's a very family environment behind the scenes and also the in front of the camera too. Everyone, there was a familiarity and collaboration and a trust that had been built either doing commercials together or other projects, and wanting everyone to kind of have a cool spotlight and a cool character for them to shine. Since it is a musical chairs of douchebags.
That's definitely, I always find it an odd dichotomy that, I mean, that's what we do with our show. Like, there's no one involved that I haven't personally known at least 15 years. There's kind of that. So there was that long time of friendship, a few of my producers I've only worked with for a few years, but the other producers that were brought in were I needed those kind of people that you guys know, the familiar. When people say there's so many people out there, I feel like it's a left or right thing when people say, oh, never work with family, never invest family, never do this. But it's like, I really feel you need that when you're producer will call you up and just be like, that show sucked. Like, you know, I would have stopped listening. Like I would have totally taken you off my list. And that would make me go, okay. And I'd go back and I'd be like, yeah, that sucked. And so I like what you're saying about the family and the film and, like, you know, having your sister be involved. What I liked that you kind of did was how each scene kind of, or each, okay, I guess this could be for you, Elizabeth, was in the writing, the development process, was it conscious, and this isn't a spoiler because we all know that, excuse me, episodes have to have like a defining moment. Was there a way of kind of how you decide when the defining moment should be? Because that's one of the best things you guys did was the defining moment didn't always have to be at the end. And that's what I thought was really rare and interesting.
Oh, well, thank you on that. It was really important to us to have that too, because, you know, I mean, you hear the name Doucheaholics and it should just be stupid, and it could very well just be shallow and have zero depth to it. And you know what, if someone wants to watch the show and just take like surface level comedy from it, like, happy to make you laugh, you know what I mean? Like, that's fine. But for the people, you know, like yourself and for us who we wanted to like dig a little bit deeper, it was really important to us to base each character with their foundation being a certain need or a certain want. And I guess there was no real like decision in terms of where to place that sort of defining moment within each episode, but it was just definitely, it was a very conscious thing to make sure that we had that and that each of these people were actually like legitimate people, like three-dimensional human beings with needs and wants, and there had to be a reason for them to be in this meeting. Nobody wants to say like, yeah, I'm just a douchebag, like the end. Like, there has to be something behind that. So yeah, I mean, in terms of actually being conscious of where we flip that in, not so much, but it was definitely a decision going into it that each episode needed to have something along those lines for each main character.
And anything for you, Sean?
I mean, the biggest thing for us was like that they're emotionally grounded, you know, because there are a lot of discussions like how far we should go. And, you know, I've heard Steve Carell say something along the lines of like, it takes like smart people to do something really dumb. And you know, and that's kind of the mindset of like, you know, Steve Martin is one of my comedy gods, like many people. And like, he's just someone that you go like, oh man, like all the kind of work he does and you can see the wit and he can do like really witty. And he can also go just like slapstick and funny and just, you know, gross out type stuff too. And that was kind of the thing for the show was that we have these emotionally grounded characters. And if we could somehow combine, you know, our love of Mel Brooks and Akira Kurosawa in something, you know, this was kind of what we were going for. Like, I love the work that like Judd Apatow does. And that's something that we just discussed a lot is like, if you have emotionally grounded characters and you have perspectives of these emotional grounded characters, if you know their needs and their wants, you know, just like when you sit down and you know a good friend, you can look at that friend and you can kind of see, recognize that little glance that they're giving. And once you start to recognize these characters and maybe their archetypes and also understand that these are like real grounded characters in this world, you get more enjoyment out of like these little looks, whereas opposed to like something that's more like sketch comedy or something that's along the lines of like Naked Gun, which, you know, I know we both love, that it's joke. And I remember even being a kid, just loving it, but there's also, you don't have any emotional attachment, but if you have, if they're emotionally grounded and you understand where they're coming from, then these characters, you kind of like want to see these characters and you want to hang out with them and kind of like see who's going to show up for the next week's meeting. So, and I think there's just a longer life to characters that are grounded emotionally. And there's a kind of comedy to come from that.
Yeah. I mean, we wanted to make something that we wanted to see. And we watch a lot of movies. Like, we watch a lot of movies. And when we watch comedies, especially, the first thing we talk about right after was either like, oh, that was hilarious, and then we go into what was really nuanced about the performances or the characters or how the certain actor took what could have been a very easy, like, one-note role and gave it depth and life. So those are the ones that we talk about and go, like, I want to watch that again, and those are the ones that stay with us. And then there's the comedies that we watch, and we go, like, I laughed a lot. That was hilarious. But then you go, like, but that was kind of it, and there was nothing memorable about it. There was no character that you think about after, that you keep with you, or, you know, it's just very surface level. And those are the things that, you know, while you have a good time watching it, they don't resonate. And as soon as you walk out of the movie theater, they're gone and out of your lives. And we wanted to make something that, you know, people are going to remember, not just because they had a good time watching it, but because something within these people might have touched something within them and resonated because they were fully developed, emotionally grounded, real people.
Yeah, and just to kind of ping pong off that too is, you know, one of my funnest nights, and this is a common thing for us editing long days and into the night, but finishing episode one, it was Elizabeth, myself, and our collaborator who helped develop the series with us, and he's our lead editor, Dustin Strosha. We were up till about like the sun was rising and we were going to walk out of the editing room and we were making one final decision on a take. And it was a line that D-Cup, that D'Angela Ashley Sullivan says, and we did 38, 40 takes of that. And our conversation lasted for hours, you know, basically from 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. The conversation was about, in take 7, does she really want to fuck him there versus like take 34? Or does take 34, is she implying this? Is she actually in love with him? Or is this one just about like animalistic urges? Each one, and it was the same line delivery, but we were like, really, where is she coming from? Where was she emotionally at the beginning of this episode? Where is she now? Where is she going to be in episode 2? And, you know, I always heard that Scorsese found his match when he, with De Niro, when he found somebody he could talk about a character tying his shoe and how he ties his shoe. for 2 hours. And for me with Elizabeth and Dustin, I mean, to me, that was a real big high. And we've had many of those conversations. One of our other big collaborators, Kevin Loader, he, you know, we'll all sit there and just discuss like one moment and be fidgeting with this one frame or this one moment or what this effect shot says about the character and how this character sees the world. And, you know, that, you know, down to like the grain and why the grains like that, or like in episode 6 where the CinemaScope bars come up and why that's that and what kind of film grain and why they see that and why there would be scratch and dust in their flashback. So those are all coming from a grounded thing as opposed to like a stylistic thing of like, cool, let's just talk about this. Like, you know, let's just do it because it's cool.
It
we never say,
pretty.
Let's look cool. Yeah.
It looks pretty or it's funny. The end. That,
yeah.
That's not, it would be great if that's how we rolled, because then I think we'd have a few less pounds on us and a lot more sleep.
We'd be done. We'd be talking to you in 2014.
Yeah. We'd be talking to you about like 5 years. Right?
There is, well, what I, you know, what, and there was things I left out of the review that, and I don't remember what I said or didn't say on some things, but you know what you guys, I would say the best thing about this show for everyone, and again, take a quick break here. This will be playing in the Bay Area this weekend. You can catch it on the big screen. You can go to doucheaholics.com. That's www.doucheaholics.com. It'll be playing at the Guild Theater on August 17th in Menlo Park and August 19th at Blue Light Cinemas in Cupertino. That's 2 weeks away. Of course, that's up in Northern California. We will get a little bit more into that after a couple more questions. But what I know I had mentioned it in my review, but I also wanted to commend you as well, Elizabeth, was that these are things that we've all seen and all made fun of, but that there was also kind of the characters that were more serious or could be, you know, like D-Cup or the episode with Jen, that there was a respect that there is a dark side to some of the characters. So I know that dark comedy comes from that, but what I liked about this was that to me, dark comedy is like someone tells you a really audacious joke and it's like, okay, if your dad told you it, it's funny. But if your mom told you it, it's not funny. This was, you know, taking something that could very easily, I mean, we all know some of the things, like I mentioned in the review, that there's nothing funny about Jen's character. But you guys found comedy in that. So in some of these conversations that you guys had, was there times where it was like, okay, you know what? It's just pushing the envelope to try to even get a laugh out of that. Like, that's a, you know, it's funny, but it's kind of a no-no. Was there moments like that?
Well, there were a few. I guess there were a few times that we kind of discussed, like, are we taking this a little too far? But ultimately, we just decided, like, what is too far? I mean, for us, I guess the general rule of thumb was, is it funny? Yeah. Like, might it offend some people? Sure. But if we're super worried about, is someone going to take this too personally and, like, is this going to hit a little too close to home? Then I think we actually, that's a good thing. Then we're touching on something. Or if there's something that we're like, oh, this is really offensive, then we go, okay, are we offended by it? No, otherwise, you know, we wouldn't put it in. I mean, but, you know, in all fairness to us, very, very little offends us. I don't think there's such a thing as like too dark for me and the dude sitting next to me right now. So there were a couple conversations. I don't know if you caught in episode 4 among... So I don't want to spoil anything, but there's some drawings in there, and there were a few select drawings that we kind of went like, ooh, this might upset our parents a little bit. but then you just have to go like, well, that's not what we're. If we based everything on how is someone else going to react to this, then I don't think we would ever get anything done. So yeah, I think we skirted the line a few times, but ultimately just decided like we don't have a line, so it's in.
Yeah, and the thing that I always keep in mind, and I know that both of us have it this way, and a lot of our friends are like this too. But it's the question is it funny? And the other question is it truthful? And if it's funny and truthful, it doesn't matter how dark it is. It's just, you know, that's what it is, you know. And like I moderated an interview with Jason Reitman. He talked about doing a magic trick in making a film, and that's the excitement for him. And I thought that was a great way to say it, but on my end, it's a little different. And I know with Elizabeth is like, is it funny? And then the thing is, can we pull it off? And like, so that means like, our conversations where we discounted something or said like, oh, did we go too far? It wasn't a case of going too far. It wasn't funny, or it was something that.
Like the dick inside of my dick.
Yeah. Yeah. Like there was a line that one of the characters said that was just really, really funny. So Anthony Marks, we do some improv too. Like the scripts are really fleshed out, and it's something that I collaborate with Elizabeth on, like, you know, in terms of what it is. And when I'm writing with Anthony in mind. But then Anthony had all these improvs, and there's like I said, there's between a trust with Elizabeth and I, with Syra, with Anthony, and with everyone else. And so like Anthony had some improv lines that we did a fun run of, like, here, let's just try this or try this. And you know, he said a line where he said something like,
I remember the line. Yeah. I won't forget this one. He literally said, "I want to put my dick inside my own dick," and it was fucking hilarious. I mean, like, it really killed. It was really hard. I remember that sitting there in character on set and trying so hard not to laugh at that, because I mean, where does this even come from? It was amazing. But then, you know, when we were watching a rough cut, and we definitely were like, we got to get that in there. Ultimately it just didn't. And this was a very long debate.
It did get laughed.
Yeah. We screened a very, very, very rough assembly of the first episode for our whole team. And it just killed. Everyone just was like crying with laughter when that line happened. So we knew, oh, this is great. This is the point, is to make people laugh. But then after some very long discussions, really between, you know, Sean and myself and Dustin and Kevin, we kind of had to kill the baby, because it just didn't work for that scene. It was one of those things that we went like, all right, maybe this is incentive to like have like a blooper reel, or to have like some kind of like, you know, deleted scene type ordeal or something, just to be able to have the world be able to hear him say that line the way he said it. I mean, it was beautiful, and I would love nothing more than to have, you know, been able to make that work, but it just didn't.
Well, yeah, that was the thing, is the barometer of, is it funny and is it truthful? Because that was all the other comedies coming from character and coming from the character's perspective, and that was inserting a joke just because it's funny, versus like that was going for a laugh, versus it coming from an honest place, honest and sincere place from one of the characters.
Well, I think, first of all, I had a quick question, and it's just a tiniest bit off topic. Were you were the moderator at CineQuest of the Jason Reitman event?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I was wondering why you kind of looked familiar when I met you. That was a great event, by the way. I'll tell you another time. Yeah, I'll tell you another time the epiphanies I had from it, but congrats on that.
Thank you.
Yeah, I actually learned a lot from it, because I watch any moderator, any host, anyone who's doing something that applies to our show. So that's kind of funny. Okay, so what I wanted to say about the line of putting the dick in your dick is that I was just taking it as there is those guys that are so into themselves, they would fuck themselves if they could, or,
yep.
You know, it's tough with me, because I have a friend who is 100%, 150% the opposite, but he's totally, you know, 0.1% body fat, 6'2", you know, just when we were younger, all he had to do was walk by a girl to get a phone number. And he just wasn't, a douchebag about it. And so that character was, you know, me living in Orange County. I see it all the time where it's like, you see a guy in a Porsche and you just, for a second, you're like, does he put a condom on and stick his, what's that little pipe that hangs out the back of the,
It's like,
does he fuck his car? It's like, he's showing his car more respect than the girl sitting in it. I can guarantee he, like, you know, just, you know, gets the right wax and gives, but then, like, won't rub the girl's feet, you know? So, I, you know, that line you just told me, I think that's really funny because down here in Orange County, it's like, I always believe in you don't knock where you live completely, but there's some major, there should be meetings like this. And that's what I found so brilliant about what you guys did, because like I mentioned, and this is for the audience in the review, down here in Orange County, we're like, if I remember correctly, statistically, we're like the AA capital of California. Like, we have so many. Yeah, we're like, there's so many places where there's meetings and NA. And again, like I said in the review, I'm not making fun of any of this. All the anonymouses you could think of. And this is for the audience. Like I had said in the review, it's like, I want to create an anonymous that's for fun. That's like where we don't have to come in and, you know, hate our family and talk about our dad and talk about what's bad, that we could just be like, we had a great day, like great day, anonymous. So I love this idea that you guys found something that is not out there, but this, some of this stuff. Okay. Let me see how I can word this question best. Where was there part of it where you were like, okay, there's not Doucheaholics meetings, but in these other meetings, people talk about these problems bothering them. So did you do any research by going to meetings to get a feel for them? Or because some of them, like this is like, you know, episode 2, that's a classic example of what a meeting might be like with no comedy.
Right. Well, and, you know, I want to quickly touch on something you said earlier about, you know, not making fun of any of these. That was, you know, always very important to us, too. Like, I would never want anyone that actually struggles with an addiction to think that we're making light of that in any way, because neither of us personally are addicted. Well, maybe film, but there's no,
right.
There's no like Movie Lovers Anonymous. Otherwise, like, we'd be
yeah, exactly.
But, you know, we don't have like a, you know, any kind of life debilitating addiction. But we do have people close to us, family and friends who do struggle with that on the daily. So this isn't something that we're making light of in any way. And I think what was really important too is the fact that anyone that steps into a meeting like this, be it a Doucheaholic meeting or, you know, an AA or an NA or an OA meeting, they're taking steps to make their lives better and to improve who they are and how they function on this planet that we really, you know, none of us really know what we're doing here. And the people that struggle with addiction, they go to these meetings to make their lives better and better for the people, you know, who they live with. And that was always really important to us to make sure that message was across. So the people in these meetings, they're there because they want to be there. And that, you know, that's the first step is admitting you have a problem. And then as far as getting back to your question, the research, neither of us have needed to attend a meeting such as, you know, NA or OA or AA, but I don't want to get too personal here, but I do have a friend who struggles with alcohol addiction, and I have attended a few meetings, you know, with her, you know, for support. And this is actually before I even knew Mr. McCarthy here. So it was kind of like research without it being research, because I had that experience, and you know, it was something that when we were putting everything together, you know, I definitely remembered some things that stuck out as far as just the procedures of the meeting and just the general sense of support and community that you get from those in the meeting with you. I guess it's difficult in a Doucheaholics meeting because when you're surrounded by a bunch of douchebags, you don't really get the support and the nurturing
right.
that one would hope for, you know, coming to a thing like this. But
right.
yeah, that's where the comedy comes in, is they're all terrible, so they can all be terrible together and help themselves through their terrible existences and hopefully come out of the meeting a little bit better.
And that's what came from our idea of, what if you just get a bunch of douchebags in a room all trying to be better, all trying to better themselves, yet they just can't help their own, like, tendencies, and each one's their own kind of archetype, and, like, there's so much fun and conflict that comes from there. And at the same time, like, we were talking about, like, it's still grounded. Like, yeah, Elizabeth is very, like, protective of, like, the way we do it and where we can have license to go beyond something, you know. Like, at one point I wanted to put a cat in there, and she was like, not yet, or maybe later, or, like, you know, something where just, like, how far can we go in the absurdism realm? And, you know, like, discussions where we talk about how, like, what are the rules? Because, like, to us, the rules here, we would look up AA rules, we would look up the anonymous rules, and if you look on the doucheaholics.com website, too, we have our own doucheaholics rules, and those are rules that's, like, it's what they try to present to themselves. But just like any other kind of anonymous meeting, people don't always follow those rules. And sometimes, like, the moderator, the person who's in charge or supposed to be leading it is sometimes, you know, someone who's probably fallen the hardest too. So each thing came from that, of talking about what are the rules of the world, and going back to, is it funny? Because, you know, like, That's always was our barometer of, like, is it funny and is it true to character? And there's a lot of funny moments that didn't make the cut. There are other funny moments where, you know, like, going back to that, did we pull off the magic trick? We got like, oh, that magic trick doesn't work, you know, so, like, we don't include that one. But, like, that was the thing with, like, the Laura character. You know, Jen Tripp's an amazing actress, and part of our thing was, let's just write something awesome for her to shine. And this character, you know, there's a lot of truth. I mean, there's something that happened with my mom when I was a kid that I remember, like, just taking a piece of that, you know, taking a piece of something that happened with me, a piece of something else, and combining it with things that Elizabeth and I have witnessed and observed, all these little observations, and putting it into this thing and going, all right, is all this stuff truthful and is it funny? And then, you know, and it's also really fun, you know, like, you know, to be having a debate for 3 hours about, like, does the dick inside my own dick work? And then, like, emails going, like, let's remove the dick line, but let's keep, you know, the fuck line. And
let's,
like,
keep,
yeah.
I want to fuck myself.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's do that. You know, so those are the, but keep the part where the 12-year-old girl says bitch. Like, you know, like, there's all these, like, that's kind of fun. If you look at our email correspondence, our conversations in person, there's a lot of, like, oh yeah, no, we should remove that dick, or we should alter that, you know? So it does make, you know, when it's also something you love, but those creative conversations that are happening because you're trying to figure out the gears to the comedy and what's working and what's not, and you know, essentially what's truthful. Because to us, we wanted it to be, if there was no comedy, you would still care about these characters. They would still be grounded, and you would still understand that they're coming from a perspective too, even if you remove the comedy.
Yeah, I was just gonna say that the perspective is there, and what I appreciated the most was that it was being respected, and, you know, for myself, and I obviously got personal in the review. Like, it was very weird for me to you know, watch episode 3 and laugh, and then remember what I went through personally, and kind of see the, you know, and so it was kind of like understanding that there can be light and dark, and I'm not religious, I'm very spiritual, so I believe you can find the most beautiful thing in a dark moment. And I know there's people that go, no, you have to be happy or stop being depressed, and it's like, well, you know what, I've done some of my best episodes while I was depressed, or I've, you know, met such and such, and they had no idea that I was just like, I don't want to fucking be here even talking to you. And they've been an associate 10 years. So I think that you guys did that perfect job of capturing everything. So what we'll move into is a couple of questions that we've started developing for each guest, and this will apply to both of you. So feel free to go first, second, whatever. you get, I come to you and I'm like, hey, I have this list of stars you want, the script's right, everything. What is your dream genre to do?
Dream genre. I mean, comedy is something that, you know, I personally, as a writer director, I personally always loved all kinds of genres, and I love the Steven Soderbergh, Howard Hawks approach of, and Kubrick did too, obviously, with you just make a, you figure out that genre and do, and try and do that genre. So I love multiple genres, and I love genre hybrids. One of the reasons I started really falling in love with comedy is I went through a dark period at a certain point, and I realized making people laugh, there's a, not only is it an art form, but it is in itself to make people laugh and discover truth. But, you know, that what a great thing that you can bring comedy to people. And like you said, with your aunt, you know, exploring that truth of yeah, that's a real thing. And like, so our thing is to be able to make that funny. We're not making fun of it, and we're not, you know, and nothing's hateful in the show. You know, it's, if anything, I think there's a sweet nature because everyone has good intentions. And so there's no hate. There's no making fun of anything. Like it's really, if you can bring comedy to something, it's our way. I think comedy is our way as human beings to laugh at the world, and to laugh at death, and to laugh at like the dark abyss, and not to get too existential, but like to laugh at the right. dark abyss and the absurdity of the world, you know. And like in this time too, I think it's great, you know, like you could look at what's happening on TV and politics in general, and like it's just this like everything, like if we can just entertain people and we're also exploring that truth while they're laughing, and the people who want to explore that truth see it, and the people who don't, they can just laugh, and they come out feeling like better, like, you know, even touching on subjects that they thought they would never laugh at. I mean, that brings me back to being a kid watching like Monty Python with my dad, or watching like Goodfellas and laughing at the, you know, the Ray Liotta, Joe Pesci, you know, do you think I'm funny? Like finding the comedy and things where you're like, whoa, like, oh, that's funny. And, you know, you're learning off other people, like my father, like learning off him what's funny and where can you find stuff. So comedy is something that I want to continue to do. Other genres, I would say, I love psychological thrillers and dramas and action films. And I think I also just love combining genres. So, I just personally think whatever genre that I would go to, I always want it to be, there'll always be funny. It just to be a different kind of tone, you know. It may not be Doucheholics, it may not be something else, you know. It might, you know, I like those movies where you didn't suspect you were going to laugh at something, just as much as I love the comedies to walk into, like Royal Tenenbaums, like, and you're the only one laughing at that one little moment, you know. So there are things like that where you
that's the best.
Sorry.
No, I'm sorry. Like you started out the answer with Howard Hawks, Kubrick, and Soderbergh. So that should have just been like, okay, you're late for your film junkie meeting, Elizabeth. No, I love that answer, Sean, because you're definitely someone that has a film problem. I can totally relate.
Yeah,
and thank you for even
Let me know. Let me and Elizabeth know.
Yeah, thank you for even mentioning Howard Hawks, because if I hear one more person say Howard Hawks, who it might turn me into a film snob, and I have friends ordered to kill me if I'm ever a film snob, so I would like to continue living. Yeah. So sorry about cutting you off, Sean, but that was a fantastic answer. We obviously have a lot more phone calls to have. Elizabeth, for you, you get a genre you get to do. It's your choice of the litter.
I mean, it would definitely be one of those like something with a lot of hyphens flashes after. I think just in general, life is pretty ridiculous. But there's always a balance. So it would definitely be dark. I know that. Probably something that my mom would say she quote doesn't care for. It would be dramatic, but it would also be hilarious. And it might make you cry like the next second after you're crying tears from laughing. You might be crying tears because you're so sad at what just happened, but that's real life. So I think I don't even know if I could put into a specific genre, just something that you watch and you relate to. And I think, you know, like I said, life is ridiculous and people are ridiculous. It's kind of the basis for our show. So just something, something that you watch and makes you feel and makes you relate. And, you know, I think oftentimes people, I hear so many people say like, oh, I hated that movie, and they can't really answer why. And then when I probe them, it turns out because a character or characters or the plot or something touched them inside and it scared them and they shied away from it. But if you really, you know, if you really think about it, then that means that was probably a good thing for you to have experienced, and you should probably explore that within yourself then. So I guess just anything that when you're done watching it, you can say that you help someone have some kind of catharsis or feeling that a little bit more understanding of themselves and the world. And I do believe the world is ridiculous. So if there is some kind of ridiculosity genre, I guess my film would fit into that, and it would star Holly Hunter.
Yeah, I think if Elizabeth could, I think, and I don't want to just put this answer in her mouth here, but she just said it with Holly Hunter. I think what she was just basically describing is if she could make her version of Broadcast News and the piano, she'd be a happy lady.
Oh, well, okay, there's another, okay, James L. Brooks and Jane Camp. Okay, okay, some crazy art film in an 80s, okay, you guys are nuts.
Yeah.
What I was going to say that you just spawned was that American Beauty, I think that was probably one of the most clear-cut genres of what you just said in terms of, I feel like every time I go back to that movie, something else happens. And it's not just because we grow or we become more knowledgeable, but there's just like, you go, oh, you know, my aunt's that crazy real estate, you know, just cares about stuff. You know, I am not saying, you know, we're in such a everything a guy says could be taken as sexist. I am not for any guy who just ditched his wife for the 18-year-old, again, 18-year-old. But I was sitting thinking the other day, I was like, you know what, both my grandfathers died at the same age. And I'm like, I'm at the halfway point to that age. And I thought, if I had been with the same woman for 25 years, I'd probably go out and buy a T-Bird too. Like, you know, I mean, whacking off wouldn't be the highlight of my day. I mean, we all know that was like the best opening of, I mean, had he not said highlight, I mean, that's what when you guys were talking about lines, had Kevin Spacey not said highlight of my day, you know, there's
and it's
so
all
much,
downhill from here.
Yeah, and it's
brilliant.
All downhill.
Brilliant.
I mean, that is, there is, and I saw that came out when I was 20. So it was like, I won't even go into how crude this would sound, even talk about it on air, but that was like, well, that's a highlight of the day. Yeah, but it usually does get better. So what the hell is this guy talking about? So that was a perfect, again, and we are now 20 years or 18, 19 years out. So for anybody, if you have not seen American Beauty, you have to watch it. It's on Netflix. Check it out. It is a brilliant masterpiece. Of course, it won Best Picture. Now, the reverse question, a genre, no matter what, you got to pay the credit card, you got to pay the rent, you got to get back to having three meals a day, not the way as filmmakers we all used to live on ramen. There's no way you're doing this genre. It just can't do it.
So a genre that you won't, that's not really like successful, I guess, is what you're saying?
No, like
it's like a last resort.
It could violate a
or
personal
just,
code. It could violate some ethics. It could, and it's not the script. It's a genre.
I mean, I'm not too inclined to do like a snuff film anytime soon.
Oh my gosh!
Be, like my last.
Oh, you know what? Everybody is answering it the same way.
I'm okay. I'll also add in there, if everybody's answering it the same way, I'll also say I would never probably direct a Barney show or kind of any kind of like kid show or some three camera setup. Like, that's not me as primarily as a director. three-camera type thing. I mean, I mean, you can see from Douchaholics and from other things, like, I personally like a point of view, and I like being able to lay something out. So, like, a show like Friends, which is one of Elizabeth's favorite shows, and it's a show that I really like, too, but, like, you know, it's a play. It's essentially a play, and I those are genres that you, like, that I don't fit in that world. And so, like, if anything, I would do it as a happy experiment, like, for that magic trick that we talked about, just to see.
Okay.
Maybe that would be a positive, or, like, you know, some kind of a live award show. Like, you know, like, I personally like, you know, we were talking about Howard Hawks, you know, I love Truffaut, I love Spielberg, and you know, everything from them to Preston Sturges and Alexander Payne, and no matter what, if the camera's moving fancy like Scorsese and De Palma, or if it's like Truffaut and Godard doing these, like, you know, experimenting with cuts or playing with structure like Tarantino and Kubrick did in The Killing, like, those are things that are fun, and you need a perspective of the camera more so, like, you know, and I think stuff and what the medium doesn't really matter. Like, True Detective is such a great series because the writer and the director and the producer, and I think that I'm not sure on the cinematographers, but, like, there was a cohesiveness throughout those 8 episodes, and that was on HBO, that was on TV. That was just a great genre, and that was perspective. There was a perspective and a point of view that you felt there. And it didn't feel like a three camera, multi-camera comedy or sitcom type thing. So for me personally, that's, I wouldn't touch those genres because that doesn't fit my style or my sense of, like, of purpose and storytelling.
Well, I really like both those answers because so far we've topped out at porn, Skinamax, and snuff films with
and Barney.
To clarify, so I didn't say anything about porn necessarily. If I gotta pay my bills, I gotta pay my bills. Because those would be amongst two consenting adults, not someone that is, like, being held there against their will and about to get murdered after they get raped on camera. So it's
right,
a very
okay,
fine
I
line,
should.
But it's something I felt the need to clarify nonetheless.
She's also saying
okay.
She wants to do porn.
No, okay,
she's very
I appreciate
specific about
okay,
the genre. Of murder, live murder, and live sex.
And, okay, yeah. Okay. I appreciate that because
and I'm being very specific about the purple dinosaur and children's comedy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, because I, you know, always, of course, it's like my friends with kids, like, they can't watch Mystic River and they can't watch something, you know, where a child is molested or, and so I'm always curious about those things. And I laugh that guests have been talking about Skinamax, porn, or whatever, because I've been this was the first project in 20 years that I didn't ask my uncle to be involved with, and I would always get these notes with the check that's like, I'd triple it if you did a porn, and I'm just like, you know, like, he doesn't get it. I'm like, no, like, I get that I'm 22, and, like, and he's never said, like, could I come visit? Could I come to set? But his thing has always been like, oh, I'd be on set. I'd be there. And I'm just like, you, okay. I'm like, it's never going to happen, but you can just keep thinking that. So that I'm grateful that I was never true. I mean, let's face it. I've been bad off enough to where I probably would have had to do one, but I would say, you know, in all due respect to the guests of the show, I would answer in the same way. Cause we all know it can be unfortunate career suicide, and with that, that's
yeah,
what's cool about no judging, no, I'm, you know, it's a genre, just Howard Hawks happen to not do one, so it gets left out. And, you know, I used to think that like when Project Greenlight came out, and then we're going into our last 5 minutes, so I'm just going to take a quick second here. I used to think when Project Greenlight came out that it would be cool to see a Project Greenlight filmmaker get to make a movie with a Spielberg budget and see what Spielberg would do if he couldn't have any actor he wanted, couldn't have a 5-time nominated Academy Award DP, and had to possibly not eat to make his film. And so
yeah.
I've al- I've always thought the dichotomy and the interest, I'm always interested where filmmakers are coming from. And I just realized I shouldn't have said an idea that some executive might hear and actually put into action. And then we'll be watching and talking about it. In our last 5 minutes here, or actually I'd say 3 minutes, but we do have five. Just want to give you guys a chance to plug any of your social media, your Facebook pages, and that screening again, so we can make sure that goes out.
So our website, if anybody just wants info, there's like a sign-up mailing list there too, so that'll let you know wherever we go and wherever the show's going to be. It's doucheaholics.com, doucheaholics.com. And then the hashtag's the same, so doucheaholics, hashtag doucheaholics, you know, so plural. We're on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook. And then we also have Gorilla Wanderers Films. So Gorilla Wanderers, GUERILLAWANDERERS.com. That's those two sites will have, and our Facebook and Instagram, those will have a lot of the information on there. But if you sign up on the doucheaholics.com site, you should be good, and you'll know whatever platforms we end up on. And then for the screenings themselves, the theatrical run, August 17th, Menlo Park, the Guild Theater. It's a historic theater built in 1929. That's a beautiful theater. We're going to be playing there. And then at August 19th, we'll be in Cupertino at the Blue Light Cinemas, and followed by an after party.
After party, always got to have those.
That's the only reason I'm going.
Yeah. that is the key to the filmmaking world. And yeah, I'm just hitting that point where I'm like, I can see why people get into this for the perks. Thankfully, I was taught better.
Part of our thing is just you know, this is going to be a very special event in terms of like we're used to people watching this, you know. Like ourselves, you can watch us on any medium, but you know, I know yourself and I know Elizabeth and I, it's about that theatrical special feeling. And this was built originally as a web series. It's now just a comedy series. So like, it's going to be on TV and various platforms, but this is going to be a very special event where, you know, it was shot cinematically. It was built by movie lovers, by filmmakers, for the cinema experience, as well as if some kid watches on his phone, like 5 years from now, like, It's just meant to be enjoyed, but this is going to be a very special event for people to check it out. And, you know, we've been carrying this baby, you know, instead of actually having a baby, we have been carrying this baby for like the last 3 years. And you know, much like Casey Anthony, I kind of, I at least understand wanting to get rid of this thing at this point and just get this out into the world.
Well, that's excellent, and I appreciate that you guys joined us today. And, of course, as I let Sean know, you guys are welcome back anytime. We do panels, guest reviews. We do all sorts of cool stuff. And, of course, we want to hear about stuff in the future. So thank you again for coming by.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having us, Paul. And I know we got to go real quick, but I just want to say thank you so much for that amazing review that you gave us. We actually listened to it last night where we had like 5 minutes to just eat some dinner, and we were just going to take five, and your thing was like 13 plus, and we just sat there just in awe at the dinner table. We were just so moved that you said those lovely things. So thank you so much for your support.
You're welcome.
I hope the rest of the film watching world feels even like half of what you express, then I think we'll be very happy that we did a good job.
Thank you, Paul. That was very lovely what you said. And just as fellow cinephiles, it's great when other cinephiles and film lovers and filmmakers enjoy the work, because obviously, you know, we want everyone to enjoy it, and it's meant for that. And there's that kind of comedy. But for someone like yourself and others who really want to see the layers and get those, it delights us to no end.
Thank you so much for that. I really appreciate it. And you guys have a wonderful day.
You too, Paul. We'll talk soon.
Yeah. Thanks very much, Paul. Thanks for having us on.
Aloha. Bye. All right. As always, I'm buzzing and not on anything good. I shouldn't have said it that way, but who cares? We were just talking about inappropriate shit. thank you so much for always stopping by anytime you do to listen to Talking Pictures. Have a great day. Make sure and watch a good movie. Aloha.